from Michigan Radio. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Governor Whitmer says some businesses can get back to work, but know this.
When you go to the grocery store or to the pharmacy or to any store that's open during this time, you need to wear a face mask.
Also, COVID and the shutdown have small business owners taking a hard look at what's ahead.
My business and many other businesses and organizations out there have to think about their future. And do we scale back on some things? Do we merge with another business? Do we come together and share space with someone else?
We'll speak with one man in Grand Rapids. Also, comedian Joe Pera talks to you about what makes his hit Adult Swim series stand out.
The show can't go at TV pace. My stand-up kind of goes at walking pace, just because that's what I do before I go on stage or on camera.
Those stories and more coming right up on today's Stateside. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. Later on the show, we're going to take a break with comedian Joe Pera. He is not actually from Marquette, but he is something of an evangelist about Upper Peninsula excellence. And his work, while extremely funny, also has a grasp on emotions that can stop your heart. But first, let's get to our top story today. Governor Gretchen Whitmer has lengthened her stay-at-home order through May 15th. And this was announced today at a news conference amid a slew of other tweaks to the order. Rick Pluta is Capitol Bureau Chief for Michigan's public radio stations, and he was there. Hi, Rick.
Hello.
What did Governor Whitmer say about why she's extending the order?
Well, we should point out that what the order does is it relaxes some of the restrictions. So golf courses can open now. Some motorboating is allowed, you know, while maintaining social distancing. But the governor has also extended overall her stay-at-home orders and says everyone has to wear face masks now. So that's, you know, that's what happened in terms of her actions.
Did she talk about specific epidemiological factors that contributed to this decision?
Yeah, you know, to use the vernacular, the curve is flattening, and so it seems safe to start allowing some more businesses to operate, but still tracking what they're doing. So if we start seeing a surge, then some of the restrictions at least would have to be reenacted.
Okay. So as you mentioned, she's proposing reopening certain businesses. We know that landscapers and lawn service companies are going to be back in business. Also, bike repair shops and other businesses that might have to do with more outdoor stuff and helping people get around. Did you notice anything about the classes of business that she mentioned?
Sure. It seems more like this is focused on sectors of the economy, types of businesses, rather than sort of a blanket reopening. And so they're calling it waves. And so it's let's try a few businesses, see what happens to the numbers of infections, and then take it from there so that it'll be a little bit now, a little bit later, and measure the response. And then if it's working, great. And if it's not, then we retrench.
I gather that big box retailers, your Home Depots, your Lowe's, your Menards, will no longer have to close off garden centers and paint and carpet and other things that they were basically told not to sell.
Right, but there's still going to be social distancing that's expected to be enforced in the aisles and greenhouses. And so it's more sectors being allowed to open. And the governor says, however, that there are still rules, although we don't know how exactly they're going to be enforced. It seems to be more of a powerful request than a dictate.
What happens if someone shows up at a store without a mask? I mean, can service be refused?
Yes, which was the case before. But yes, service can be refused. We know that in some businesses, if someone shows up without a mask, that they'll be handed one as a condition of entering.
I've seen a couple of businesses around Southeast Michigan, albeit better healed ones, that were actually handing out plastic gloves to people before they walked in.
I've experienced that also.
Rick, last week, Michigan's Republican legislative leaders drafted and released their own plan for restarting sectors of Michigan's economy. It, among other things, suggested designating Michigan counties as either low risk, medium risk, or high risk, and a tiered system of rules that might apply to each of those. Did you get any sense that Governor Whitmer was affected or informed by that plan, or maybe this was some sort of response to it?
I think one of the major differences between what the Republicans are proposing and what the governor has proposed is that the governor is focused on sectors of the economy, types of jobs, whereas the Republicans are a little more focused on geography, places where we're not seeing a lot of infections. And one of the problems, and this is not just an issue that the governor and the administration have with this, but I've also talked to some other epidemiologists, is that it's just a matter of time until a wave of infections hits rural areas. We're already starting to see it. And what the problem there is that there are fewer facilities, fewer hospital beds to deal with a wave of infections. Even if you're seeing a flattening of the curve in southeast Michigan, where we're seeing most of the infections right now, that it takes a smaller number of infections in rural Michigan, in northern Michigan, to overwhelm the public health system.
It's only been a couple of hours since Governor Whitmer made these announcements, but have you seen any Republican response today?
We know that the legislature is in session, and they are adopting bills to, first of all, they're creating a bicameral bipartisan commission that's supposed to examine the state's response to the coronavirus crisis. And they've granted themselves subpoena power in order to force people to come in and testify. We'll see how that will play. But the governor can't veto that. That's a joint resolution that she doesn't have authority over. But there is also another pair of bills that would create new restrictions, basically how long the governor's emergency orders can last without lapsing and requiring a reauthorization by the legislature. And those are also on the calendar, although the governor has said that if they land on her desk, they're vetoed, that she's not going to give away her authority to deal with this crisis or for that matter, any future crises.
You know, I was curious about that. Assuming that the votes can be assembled to pass these bills, and assuming it makes it to the governor's desk and she vetoes it, what then do these bills attempting to limit the governor's power mean? Is this more of a statement from the leadership?
I mean, it would be a message that they're not happy with how things are, about how this is playing out, and it's just a choice between sustained conflict over this or whether or not they can come to some kind of an agreement.
How much did Governor Whitmer give us hope that there might be some more loosening of restrictions in the weeks to come? Or did she talk about what factors she'd want to see in order to loosen things further?
It would be numbers of infections, where we're seeing increases and where we're seeing a flattening of the curve or even decreases. That would determine what happens next. She said that basically the plan is baby steps. Move forward a little bit, see what happens. If it works, maybe move forward a little bit more. And if the experience is not good, then maybe you drop back a little bit and wait for things to get better.
So, Rick, Governor Whitmer says that she wants to be careful. She wants to be sure that she doesn't reopen Michigan's businesses too soon. What does she mean when she says that, reopening too soon might actually be worse than not reopening at all?
Well, now, I'm not an economist or an epidemiologist, but I'm about to play one on the radio. That what the governor has said and what other experts have said is that you don't want to reopen things too quickly so that there's another surge. And if there's a surge that's bad from the public health perspective, because then you're going to overwhelm parts of the system that are just going to be recovering from that first wave, that once you start flattening the curve, that you want that trend to continue. But there's also an economic danger, a danger from the business perspective, is as businesses are getting back on their feet, as businesses that have been closed are reopening their doors or expanding their operations, well, while this has been going on, they've burned through their savings, that there's not a piggy bank to fall back on to try to keep them going or restarting. And so you want to make sure that this is done in an even-handed manner so that everybody can manage their expectations.
It's no secret that the worst outbreaks of the virus have been concentrated in the heavily populated areas of the state. Wayne County, mm-hmm. certainly, but also Oakland and Macomb counties. How politically important are these areas to Gretchen Whitmer?
Oh, I mean, they're the anchor of her support, although she also did well in Kent County, where the city of Grand Rapids is located. But yeah, they're the anchor of her support. They're the anchor of Democratic support. There are certainly significant Republican areas in Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb. But I mean, that's the battleground. That is where statewide elections are decided in Michigan. And they also have the most members of the House and the Senate because they have the most people.
People are dying in areas where the virus is hitting the hardest. But is there a danger for Gretchen Whitmer if she's not paying attention to things that legislative Republicans are saying right now?
Well, the danger is the danger that any political system would face in something like this is that there needs to be cooperation among leadership in a crisis, not deadlock, not conflict. And if there is sustained conflict, then you take your eye off the ball, your eye off doing things that will actually help the economy recover, doing things that will make sure that the number of infections declines, as opposed to doing things that wind up being counterproductive.
Rick, we have less than a minute to go here. Given the temperature between the governor's office and the legislature before COVID-19 was a thing, would you say that the relationship has significantly worsened throughout the crisis?
I don't know if it's worsened or gotten better, but you know what we've seen with the conflicts before this is there was a lot of goodwill that was burned up. And when there was an opportunity to create a cooperative relationship between the legislative leadership and the governor, that time was spent doing other things. Now we're in the midst of a crisis, and that relationship building period was basically wasted.
Rick, thank you so much.
You bet.
Rick Pluta covers state politics and legislative business in Lansing for the state's public radio stations. Still to come on the program, small businesses are finding many ways to deal with the shutdown orders. We'll talk with a small business owner from Grand Rapids and get his thoughts after the break. This is Stateside. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. All small businesses are impacted in some way by Governor Whitmer's stay-at-home order. It's tough for folks who deal in perishable products and those who rely on word of mouth and casual walk-ins. Maybe it's especially difficult for people of color who've had a unique set of challenges getting their businesses started. This particular intersection is where we find Jermail Eddy. He owns Malamaya Juice Bar and Eatery in downtown Grand Rapids, which he and his wife founded in 2013. And he's with us today. Jermail, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you for having me on.
Will you tell us a little bit about your place?
Yeah, we are what I would consider a community center, community is essentially the center of our business. And so I guess it'd be a non-traditional community center. Malamaya Juice Bar started in 2013 and is named after my three boys, Malachi, Nehemiah, and Josiah. And we get Malamaya and we make juices, smoothies. We do salads and wraps and other health immunity booster shot beverages. And essentially, we just want to provide the community with love, and it's just coming in the way of our healthy products.
Right. So you're really in an interesting situation. Malamaya had just moved to a new location. and were right. adding food to the menu just as the stay-at-home order was starting to go into effect.
Right.
What happened?
Well, we looked at the forecast and it looked a little cloudy.
So yeah.
We took one day off, like a day and a half off, to totally transform our website, to donate all of the actual food items that we had. We donated a bunch of salads to Baxter Community Center, and we're donating, getting rid of juice, milks and yogurt. And we immediately said, you know what, we're going to stop going forward with the food items, and we're just going to focus on juices that we can make and bottle ourselves. And so that was the immediate thing. We cut our staff, and we cut about 60% of our menu with the hopes that the community will continue to support us, and they have.
Amazing. So what was your reaction when you'd first heard that the stay-at-home order was coming down?
My first reaction was that if it's happening in that way, it's probably going to be best for the overall community, for the end result, to get through this. But from a business perspective, I was thinking, oh my gosh, I made a significant investment in a place that has the opportunity and possibility of lots of foot traffic, and it doesn't seem that there's going to be any of that right now. And so it was like, okay, I can either stop the business and just go sit at home, or I can do all that I can to keep my employees employed and to keep my business alive and to keep the community healthy.
Yeah. So what has that meant? Have you been able to do this without reducing staff?
I have not. We reduced our staff on March 16th when all of this stuff went down. I reduced the staff, starting with those younger employees who are still in high school, so they still live at home. I recognize that depending on the community in which you're from, because you are a younger employed person or because you still live at home and you're a student, that may not always mean that you don't support the family. And so
right.
With those individuals, I told them that if we can bring them back later, we can. But if they needed any help doing something, filling out paperwork, unemployment, whatever, let me know. So we started there first. And then we had two other employees who had second jobs who were going to keep them on. And so they said that they would be fine to reduce their hours to zero. And so I kept my manager, and we have one other young lady who works for us, and she did not work for us long enough to be able to get unemployment. And so part of the reason why we're still going hard right now as we can is because I want to make sure that she is taken care of.
Right. There was one thing I've been really curious about, and that is how delivery is going. When mm-hmm. this started, I think you were taking orders with some of the mass market services, and I believe
yes.
you're doing it yourself now. Could you talk to us about the challenges of getting the product in the hands of customers?
Sure. Yeah, we did. We were working with two other organizations when it came to a delivery for our customers, getting the juices and our other products to them. And when we switched to a model, what we originally called Malamaya door-to-door or door delivery, it's like, how are we going to make that possible? And so I'm using my personal vehicle to go out and about to different homes. And so one of the issues as temperature begins to change is ensuring that the product is still cold upon arrival.
Right.
And so So I'm driving with big coolers in my car, and I'm pulling up at people's homes and their driveways and hopping out. And I think people are kind of skeptical to look out the window or to open the door because we're all supposed to be staying at home. And so what I ended up doing is just leaving it on the doorstep, and I would send a text message to say, hey, your juices have been delivered and they're at the door. The only way that this is possible, though, is that the company Well Design, who operated our website, they immediately acted on switching our brand new website that we just launched to switching it again for deliveries only.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Have you tried to apply for any of the federal loans or grants that are available right now?
I did. I applied for whatever I could. I spent hours and nights and everything just trying to apply for all of this stuff. You get some mental and the emotional fatigue, I tell you. And so, you know, the mental fatigue is there. The emotional fatigue is there when you get that email to say you did not get something. But yeah, we were able to apply for a lot of the things early on.
Well, there are additional rounds of stimulus money, you know, slowly working their way through the pipeline. Do you think you'll try again to apply?
Yeah, we're gonna keep trying. But what I do want to be cognizant of, as we continue to have our business open, I want to be cognizant of the amount of revenue that we're bringing in. And notice I said revenue and not profit. I want to be mindful of the revenue that we're bringing in, because I want to make sure that I don't take from what others could have. And so if there's a period of time where I feel like, hey, you know what? Our business is okay. We're meeting our basic minimal needs. I may defer that application and allow someone else to hopefully get that money.
For sure. You know, every small business is hurting right now, but I've got to believe that there are additional barriers for Black-owned businesses that may have issues with access to capital and other factors.
Oh, yes, yes. A lot of people will say that the COVID-19, the coronavirus, has brought to surface all of the racial disparities, socioeconomic disparities in our country. But those of us who are in the communities that have those despairs, like the African-American community, the Latino community, other communities, we've been experiencing this for forever. And when Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans, the folk there said, hey, I don't think the government or anyone's coming to save us. We got to get together and save ourselves. And that's the climate that we're in right now, is we have to come together amongst ourselves, neighbor to neighbor, door to door, business to business. And so when it comes to access to funds as a small business, we're sitting out here helping each other. We're putting up Facebook pages and text message groups saying, hey, did you apply for this? Hey, did you apply for that? And some of what I'm finding is some individuals may not have the financial accounting measures in place to apply for some of the funds, because they're asking for a profit and loss statement or a balance sheet. And so I'm doing the best that I can with the knowledge that I have to help people find those things, to tell people about these applications, and then going a bit further and encouraging others to employ some of these accounting practices in their business even after COVID-19. And some of the reason why some of us don't have these in play is because we didn't know.
Right.
The field has never been even. And so some knowledge of how to run a business, or that you need to have X, Y, and Z in place, we just didn't know. We weren't told.
Do you have any sense at this point of what recovery might look like for your business?
For my business, recovery is going to, it's going to be interesting to figure out what exactly that's going to be. But I do know that my business and many other business and organizations out there have to think about their future. And do we scale back on some things? Do we merge with another business? Do we come together and share space with someone else? And so with Malamaya Juice Bar and Eatery, we're thinking about that every single day. We're thinking about what are the essential items that we need to have on our menu that our customers would buy. And so we recognize that a juice and a smoothie may come off to some as a luxury item. And so what are some other lower cost items that we can have on our menu? Because the bottom line is we have healthy products. We have health in a cup. We have health in a bowl. And so some of the things that we're thinking about is, how do we launch products that may help people do some of these things at home? Do we need to launch a YouTube channel of a how to make a juice, how to make a smoothie? So we're thinking of those things as they come to us. But we're also thinking about what other businesses and partnerships do we need to have. And then finally, for our business, we're thinking about actual man and woman power. And when I say that, I'm talking about, should we employ as many people as we had before, or should we scale back and therefore get our juices into stores? And so we're not making as much juice here at our shop, but we're doing a wholesale model where Meyer could carry our juices, or, you know, Big B Coffee or Ferris Coffee or some of these other businesses can carry our products for us. And that would help us kind of get back stable so that we can get back into this cafe model that we have going right now.
Right. To your point about the product line, I was curious if you have anything that washes the taste of isolation away.
We do. I believe that all of our products are fantastic products. And one of our biggest sellers right now is the Rise and Shine Juice, orange, apple, carrot, and ginger. And that particular juice, it boosts the immune system. And it also just, it's called the Rise and Shine. It just brings a smile to everyone's face because of the vibrant orange color and also the dynamic flavors.
Jermail, that sounds absolutely amazing. What do you think is the most helpful to you in just keeping going these days?
A couple things come to mind. One is my family. Seeing my three boys and my wife and the smiles on their faces, especially for the kids, they know things are going on. We talk to them often, but they're still happy. They're still doing kid things. They're still hunting for bugs and playing with sticks and arguing about who's looking at who and all that good stuff.
Right.
But the other factor is the word love, L-O-V-E. I love my community. I love the next person. I love humankind. And, you know, for us, we consider ourselves as one that's planting seeds of love no matter where we are, no matter what we're doing. We want to be light to the community in lighter times, but also in the darker times. And so every time I deliver a juice, every time I talk to someone who has a question about a business application, I'm saying, this is an opportunity to show unconditional love during this time and integrity. And so, you know, our business and our household runs off of three principles. That's kindness, excellence, and integrity. And if we can all do those three things, we're going to get through this together.
Amazing. You know, the kind of business that you run is subject to lots of different considerations about reopening. There's the question about just getting back in production, but then there's the question about whether things like foot traffic will return. If you had the governor's ear right now, and you were thinking about the concerns of workforce and customers and yourself and your family, what would you hope would be on her mind as decisions are getting made in Lansing about whether some businesses should get back to production?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it's that although I understand the economic impact of what's happening right now, I don't want us to all move too fast. I don't want us all to get out there too quickly and to begin to re-spread something once we hit the peak and it starts to go down. I don't want to continue to put people at risk. So to open the economy slowly. And then I would love to tell the governor to really look at how to best support how to best support the farm workers, those who are out there, the farms and the migrant workers, how to support them with better wages, better working conditions and living conditions, and really, really consider how do we do more local business within Michigan, again, especially with the farmers as it applies to my particular business, and to really look at the minority farmers, the farmers of color, and see how do we encourage them to continue doing what they're doing, because they've been left out as well historically. And so I know that as a state, we want to get back on our feet. We want to get things going together, but we got to begin to do this in baby steps. And so as much as I want my business to get out there, get back going and just start killing it when it comes to the revenue, I'm more concerned with the safety and health of the community.
Jermail Eddy, owner of Malamia Juice Bar and Eatery. Jermail, good luck with all this. And we just wish you safety for your family and everybody who's working in the operation right now.
Thank you very much. You all have a wonderful day. Thanks for having me.
Every week, we've spent some time checking in on students from Community High School in Ann Arbor. They're among the 1.5 million young people stuck at home during the pandemic, away from their school, their teachers, and their friends. Let's listen.
Last week was a little bit stressful getting back into school and like back into the swing of things. I personally prefer having grades. It made me more motivated. So now I kind of just like, why am I doing anything? And I have to remind myself that I need to learn.
Been trying to keep up with schoolwork, getting used to online school.
Yeah, I'm having a little trouble focusing right now.
I haven't been doing much, really. I've lost all motivation to do any sort of schoolwork.
We realize that we are out of and or almost out of a couple of different medications. That's just stressful trying to get a hold of those medications while the whole world is kind of in pandemonium.
This morning I went on a walk. It was really nice to see flowers. No one else was out, which was also really nice because then I didn't have to worry about walking past another person and I could just focus on the walk.
Despite how eager I am to get back out into the real world, like, I still get anxiety while passing someone on the sidewalk while on a run. So I think it'll probably take some time for me to get over that, to overcome that, when we're allowed to leave the house.
I counted 10 girls, like exactly 10 girls walked through the night, like in a huge group, but none of them had masks on. They weren't social distancing. And they were all walking through the neighborhood together, and they took up like half a lane of the street. Please, please, just stay home. That's what everyone's saying, but just stay home.
Even though, like, the whole world is stopped, spring is still coming, and, like, the trees are still leafing out, and flowers are still blooming, and the birds are still making nests, and it just seems like the only thing that's really normal right now. Because I always look forward to spring coming, and that's just, it feels normal to me, and that's really comforting. Yeah, so that's what I've been thinking about. Bye.
That piece was produced by Michigan Radio's Rachel Ishikawa. Support for Michigan Radio comes from the Michigan Health Endowment Fund and the Children's Foundation. Stay with us. This is Stateside. I'm April Bear. Comedian Joe Pera is not from Marquette, but the version of himself he plays in a series of short films is easily recognizable to anyone who lives in or has family in a small town in the UP.
You know, Joe, if you're still having trouble finding the perfect tree, why not get an artificial tree?
I don't like fake trees. They take business away from farmers here in Michigan. I would like to say a few other things on the subject, but can't, because this is a family show.
The series Joe Pera Talks With You has become a runaway hit on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim nighttime block. His oddball observations on subjects like beans and grocery stores are weirdly hilarious. But perhaps what really makes the show is that Joe Pera is not just being funny.
Have you decided what type of tree you'll choose yet? It's an important decision. Cutting down a tree is taking a life. Besides, if you cut down the first tree you see, you won't have the opportunity to wander around and cut your own tree farm with your family.
Is this Michigan-informed series the Mr. Rogers-level guidance that we all need right now? We needed to talk to this guy to find out. Joe Pera is actually from Buffalo, New York. When he's not shooting the series in Marquette and locations in Wisconsin, he lives in New York City. Joe Pera, welcome to Stateside.
Thanks for having me.
Had you ever been to Marquette before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What was your purpose for traveling our way?
Well, I guess we started with a show about how to pick out the perfect Christmas tree in 2016. And we had to shoot it in October so that it could air by Christmas time. We're looking for a place in a Christmas tree producing area that was likely to get snow in October, and that kind of led to Marquette.
What was it about the place that seemed like a venue that you wanted to play with a little bit?
Well, I mean, as soon as we shot the Christmas special in Newberry nearby, and just through research and visiting a number of times, I became interested in the area. It seemed a lot like where I grew up in Buffalo with a former kind of industrialized place. It's a little bit smaller, so it made it more compact for the story, but it's got an interesting history. You know, people love hockey and beer in both places, and it's cold, although Marquette is much colder and outdoes Buffalo on snow by a lot. But there are a lot of similarities in the personalities, and it also kind of reflected a lot of the themes of the stories and the characters that we wanted to tell. So it just seemed like the perfect place, and also just the setup and the nature surrounding it provided a nice environment to set the show, and one that, I don't know, I was very inspired when I visited, and and also I guess when you make it a show or a movie, you can write things that you want to do, and so I figured I'd like to keep going back to Marquette and have an excuse to do that, so the show was kind of a part of the decision, too.
That's perfect platform.
Mm-hmm.
The version of Joe Pera who we see in the show is something that you worked on through stand-up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wondered how people reacted to Joe Pera when you were first exploring this character a little bit. I mean, I'm trying to imagine somebody catcalling or heckling. I feel very protective of you. And I would really want to get up in someone's face if they were giving you a hard time.
Oh, I appreciate that. I'll tell them that if anybody heckles me going forward, that there's someone in Michigan who's ready to fight. She works at NPR, and I'm sure that they'll back down immediately.
But seriously, I mean, what were people's reactions like when you first started getting up on stage?
It was different. I think I'm not like the fastest comedian, or wit or anything. So I just kind of played to my strengths. I took my time up there, and I think that it's often a contrast to the other people on the shows I'm performing on. So when it's, you know, somebody takes their time and people tune in, and I guess sometimes takes a minute for people to, you know, enjoy the new pace. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they definitely don't, but I mean, at the core of it is just writing good jokes. So, you know, you can set whatever pace you want on stage, but if the jokes and material isn't there, it doesn't matter. So they tune in, and also once they were tuned in, I'd be able to, you know, tell what I think are good jokes. And it's tough sometimes in a louder environment. And I don't know, one of my worst performances, I was offered $100 to perform in a casino outside of Buffalo, and there's nobody really watching. And then on top of that, you had all the noise from the casino machines, and it was kind of a disaster. So it's hard to compete with the environment like that.
Almost everybody I know who's connected with you through Adult Swim makes the comment that this is a really different kind of show for Adult Swim.
Mm-hmm.
How did they approach you about how this might fit in?
I had an animation that I made for them called Joe Pera Talks You to Sleep, in which I tried to talk the audience to sleep. And it was based on some stand-up that I was doing, because my one friend commented that my material may inadvertently have a calming effect. So I kind of played into that, and I pitched it to them. They gave us a very small budget to make it on our own. And so we did. People seemed to like it, and I think that, like, being able to put that on air and just make the thing, because it's kind of hard to describe. It doesn't quite make sense, but I think it works the same way that on Adult Swim, the same way that, you know, if there's a loud comedian in front of me, if I'm, you know, coming on after an episode of, I don't know, a Family Guy, but it's a
Rick and Morty or something.
Sure, it's a nice contrast, and I think it helps both shows because it enhances the tone of both programs. So I think it really works maybe even better on Adult Swim than it would anywhere else.
You work with a team of writers now.
Uh-huh.
Was it scary to open up to other people?
Yes. It's hard to communicate the tone, and, you know, it's also a very personal show in a way. Everything on the show I believe in, and it's about, especially the past season, was about personal stuff that happened to me. And so luckily I had everybody who writes on it is a close friend, and now that we have, like, the season two was much easier to write that now that the template was laid out. I think we all, except for Katie, who's from Arizona, comes from the Midwest, and kind of has an understanding of the culture and tone, and our backgrounds kind of align. So it makes it easy in that way.
So much of the charm of the series is what you're talking about with the pacing. There are times when I've been watching it and I thought you were just frozen or had completely derailed. But I realized that you're just thinking things through. Are there ever times when you have to sort of push yourself to slow it down, to just hit the right pace?
Definitely. I think like with my stand-up or even working in the writer's room, they'll get frustrated because I just need time to think. But it's really interesting doing it and as a part of a TV production because everything moves so fast and there's so many people involved and pressure to make time that, it comes time to shoot, I kind of just need to relax, maybe take a walk around the block and remember that the show can't go at TV pace. I understand, why people speed it up or whatever, but I think my stand-up kind of goes at walking pace just because that's what I do before I go on stage or on camera.
Yeah. In the show, you're a choir teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do choir growing up?
Yep.
What was your favorite song to sing?
I don't know. I remember in like middle school, high school, like all those Moses Hogan compositions were fun because they were, spirited and loud and catchy. I remember enjoying that. It was always a treat when the teacher would let you sing a popular song as opposed to traditional choral music. That was always good.
Yeah, they pull out the Beatles and everybody kind of loses their mind.
There's a really wonderful video of this middle school choir singing Blackbird. It's funny in like a really nice way, but they get through the whole song and then this one kid stiffly, walks through the rest of the choir, comes up to the stage and sings, "You were only waiting for this moment to arrive." That's it. And then he like turns and walks back, and I think it's the funniest thing. And he couldn't have been more serious about it. I don't know.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Joe Para. He's the star and creator of Joe Para Talks With You, a series that's seen on Cartoon Network's Adult Swim.
There are a number of vegetables you can grow on an arch, but I chose beans because good flavor. Can you describe the flavor of beans? Me either, but I know it's much better than eating plain rice. They're simple to grow, and you can eat them now, or you can can them and eat them years from now.
There's so many episodes where you're just kind of talking about beans and iron and breakfast and stuff. And then there's this one episode where you're talking to us about writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to write your Nana's obituary.
Right.
And right out of the gate, it's heartbreaking. And she was in the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she played herself in the Christmas episode. And she passed during the process of season one. She wasn't able to. We had to go to Buffalo to shoot part of the Christmas special because, we could shoot in her kitchen and that was the only option because she wasn't going to come to shoot it elsewhere. But I thought she was one of the funniest people that I knew. And yeah, she was my last remaining grandparent. I got to spend a lot of time with her growing up. So I don't know. It's maybe the trying to write that obituary is just analogous to how difficult it was to, explain to somebody else how, somebody special can be to you. But on paper, it's hard to explain what was so wonderful about her. And, just the effort to put that on paper and make other people understand. Yeah, and that difficulty, that's kind of what the episode is about. And also, how do you sum up somebody's life in three sentences?
Anyone who saw the Christmas episode, I think, really is kind of there with you.
Yeah, she kind of always popped off the screen and the videos that she was nice enough to do. It was very funny. We would like feed her lines and she wouldn't want to memorize. We just feed her the lines and then she'd recite them back.
Jill, are you bringing a girl for Christmas dinner this year?
You know I don't have a girlfriend, Anna.
I know, but I thought you'd bring one anyway.
No, I don't think so.
Well, anyway, did you get yourself a Christmas tree yet?
I looked this morning, but none of them felt right. I like yours, though. How'd you choose the Scotch pine?
They don't shed their needles, and I don't have to bend down to pick up the bristles.
How come you don't like to pick up the bristles?
Because I'm old.
That was very funny. I think it, during the Christmas episode, she was like, she doesn't understand why you do the line more than once. So after a few times, she got tired of it, and she like pretended to be like losing energy. But then as soon as the crew left her kitchen, me and Marty were still there, and she stood up and was like, okay, what do you guys want for lunch? She had kind of like faked out the fake tired to get rid of everybody.
Why was it important to you to show some sides that are serious and even painful in the series?
Honestly, a number of the writers had lost somebody during the first season. And Connor O'Malley, who is, I guess people wouldn't expect by watching his videos or knowing who he is to suggest it, but he actually pushed to try and approach that storyline. But I don't know. I think that to not touch on loss, darkness, other things, the show would be just wouldn't be true to life, and it would make for a tacky television show.
Well, in addition to the funny stuff and the moments of human suffering, one of the things I really value about the show is moments of awe or wonder. I think my favorite, and I think a lot of people's favorite, is the episode called Church Announcements, where you are doing the church announcements. And you just sort of stop as an aside to explain about your new favorite song. You've heard The Who's Baba O'Reilly on the radio. And we see you in that moment when you heard this song, just transfixed. And then breaking out into spontaneous freestyle dancing around the house. It's kind of very you and very not you at the same time. How did you settle on Baba O'Reilly as the right song for that?
There's no other song that does it. We had that idea, and then we showed it to the network, and they're like, you got to think of alternatives. This is going to cost a fortune in music rights. But I don't know. There's no alternative song that was equally, funny and a great song that kind of holds up the time that somebody probably should have heard before, and it's, so ubiquitous. But I think everybody could relate about a song like that, and it was great.
Everybody who we meet in the show seems so perfectly cast.
Yeah.
And I wondered that when you're on location in Wisconsin or in the Upper Peninsula, is everybody that we see just like a person that you guys go out and recruit, or are some of them cast and brought in?
It depends. I think that's one of the most fun parts of the process is including people that you think are funny in terms of the people in the cast, like Joe Scott, who plays Sue Melski. A lot of friends are in the show that I've just worked with and found funny in New York. But also, when we're on location, we had an episode where we needed a wedding DJ, and we were doing karaoke one night. There's a post-Fish Fry karaoke night, and the DJ, DJ Brian, was a real interesting character, the way that he was singing and running the karaoke night. So we said, we asked him if he would be interested in doing it. This season, we were looking for the perfect beauty parlor, and we finally found one. And the owner, Yvonne, was such an interesting person, too, that we ended up casting her as one of my grandmother's friends on the show, Carol. And, actors can be interesting, but this is a person who's run a beauty shop her entire life. She talks to the customers for and knows their secrets and has a gift of conversation. And you can just feel that when she's on screen and doing the role. And it's also exciting when you cast non-actors, they bring like an excitement to it because it's a new process to them. And it's fun to just let people be themselves. I think that that's one of the best ways to create an interesting show. It's great.
Joe Parra, I just want to thank you so much both for talking to us and for the show. It feels like everything we needed last year and this year.
I truly appreciate that. Yeah, hopefully we'll get to make more and be back in Michigan soon.
Okay. You take care of yourself, okay?
Yeah, you too. Thanks for promising to fight on my behalf.
You know where to find me.
I'll hold anytime. You to that.
Joe Parra. You can see episodes of Joe Parra Talks With You online right now, or if you watch Cartoon Network during the Adult Swim block. That's our show for today. Join us next week as we look deeper into Governor Whitmer's latest plan and hear from members of Congress about stimulus and the path forward for reopening the nation. I'm April Baer. Stay safe. We'll see you Monday.